Welcome to the Doggy Dojo. I'm your host, Susan Light, a Los Angeles-based dog trainer and behavior consultant on a quest to become worthy of the title Sensei of the Doggy Dojo. Today we're talking about a really exciting training protocol for dogs with high prey drive, predation substitute training. I'm joined by the protocol's creator, who is a certified dog trainer and behavior consultant from Germany. She specializes in force-free anti-predation training and is the author of three books, the Predation Substitute Training Series, Hunting Together, Rocket Recall, and Don't Eat That. She is proud to be an associate trainer at the Scotland-based Lothlorien Dog Training Club, a member of the Initiative of Force-Free Dog Training, the Pet Professional Guild, and the Pet Dog Trainers of Europe. Please welcome Simone Muller. Welcome to the podcast, Simone.
Hi, Susan. Thank you very much for having me.
I'm really excited because your program or your... What do you call it? Your protocol?
Yeah, I think protocol would be the right word here, yeah.
Yeah, your protocol is so exciting, and I've seen so many people have a lot of success. I will totally admit to being unaware of how it completely works. Like, the general gist, I think I understand, but I'm really excited. I'm like halfway through your book. I bought the first edition right before the second edition came out. I'm really excited to learn more about it because I think it can be really useful for a lot of dogs.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yeah, indeed it can be.
So let's help people kind of understand what predation substitute training is. Let's start at the beginning. What is the prey sequence?
Well, the predatory sequence that a lot of people are not aware in its full range is when a dog goes hunting, literally speaking. And it all starts with orientation in the environment. So the dog, for example, comes out of a woodland and he looks across the field. They normally stop and they tend to look left, right, and their noses twitch, their ears twitch. They are looking, is there something to hunt in the environment? And people are pretty much unaware that their dogs are already in hunting mode at this stage. But then if the dog is able to spot something interesting that might be huntable, they go into a stalk, which means their whole posture changes. They go arrow-shaped and they are all pointed towards this animal. And the next part of the predatory motor pattern is that they creep forward in order to bridge the gap between themselves and their prey animal in order to get really close to it before they start the chase. And this is the moment when most dog owners realize, oh gosh, I'm in trouble, my dog is hunting, because they realize it only when their dog goes chasing. But we just saw that a lot comes before that, when the dog was still approachable for their owner. When we have the possibility to do something about this behavior. If the dog is lucky, let's call it lucky, and able to make some prey, what they next do is they grab it and they normally shake it until the prey animal is dead, and then they hold on to it a little longer, and then they start to dissect and eat. And this is where the predatory motor pattern has come to an end.
That's so interesting. Is it always in the same sequence? Does it ever go out of sequence, or that's just innate?
Yeah, no, this is the specialty about our dogs. They come with special effects. No wild predator would ever change this sequence, but our dogs are able to perform just parts, or they go random about the order because they don't really need it to make prey, because they have their bowl full of food every day. And they were also genetically engineered by us humans to show parts of this behavior in order to help us with our daily tasks. For example, if you are a hunter, a human hunter, then you need a dog that is able to track a wild animal that is maybe wounded because your shot has not killed it immediately. But then again, you don't want them to start to dissect and eat the meat, because this is what you want to do. So we have dogs that are bred for a certain task. And this makes it more easy to deal with this predatory behavior, because they are hardwired to cooperate with us. But on the other hand, it makes it so hard because we have dogs that chase and do not show the parts that come before that. And this makes it really hard for the humans to realize, oh God, I have to do something because the dog is already gone.
Yeah, especially like the bigger dogs.
Yeah.
And so is that why dogs love to hunt and chase so much? Because it's just innate?
Oh, there are so many factors why they love and chase a lot. It is innate, which means that it feels good for themselves. It's self-rewarding. There are hormones and neurotransmitters released during the hunt that feel for us humans, like gambling or like doing drugs. So they want to repeat this over and over again when they have experienced those nice feelings. Yeah. And then, of course, it's learning experience. It's not only innate. It's also that they have experience at one point. Oh, this is quite fun. So let's do this again. It's a learning thing as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, I understood, obviously, there was neurological things going on, but that it's comparable to doing drugs or gambling, like that level, that, wow, that's coming up against a lot. To try to be like, here's a treat instead.
Oh, no.
Of that.
No. No, that doesn't work. It's all about dopamine. It is a misconception that hunger drives predation. If it was that easy, we could just give our dogs a treat or feed them before our walks, and then we wouldn't have that problem anymore. It works in wild canines when they are not hungry. The deer can run past and they don't care. But in our dogs, it's all about the fun. It's all about what they have been bred to do by us. We highlighted that so much and put so much self-intrinsic motivation in this behavior that they can just do it over and over and over again, even if they're not hungry or they don't know what to do when they have made prey. They just stand in front of this dead animal and say, okay, now what?
Yeah. So what is predation substitute training?
Well, predation substitute training is a holistic approach to tackle predatory behavior in dogs, because the normal approach that are more traditional are stopping and interrupting predatory behavior when it happens. So, for example, by if you use aversive measures, by an e-collar, by a spray collar, or if you are a positive trainer, you try to do the same with a recall. So also interrupt that the dog is not going into a chase. It often doesn't work very well. So predation substitute training is a more holistic approach on the whole topic. We aim at management and prevention, which means basically lowering arousal outside, because a lot of dogs are so excited and so aroused when they are out and about that they cannot eat. They do not have time to look back to their owner. And to be honest, a dog that does not have the time to eat or does not have the time to look back at you every now and then will never have the time to come back when you call them. So this is the first part, that we try to lower arousal and that we teach the dog to stay in touch with their owner. And the second aspect is that we teach tools that a dog owner can use when they come across wildlife. And this does not mean interrupting predatory behavior altogether, but rather experiencing safe parts that we just mentioned in the beginning, for example, orientation or looking at an animal, in order to... So we use these parts so that the dog has something to hunt in a safe way, but they do not go into the unsafe parts, the chase, the grab bite, the kill bite. And because all of those stages of the predatory motor pattern are intrinsically self-reinforcing for the dog and they are hardwired to cooperate with us, they really can learn to show those safe parts instead of the unsafe parts.
Wow.
Yeah. This is really amazing. And when you see, sometimes people don't believe it, but then we train their dogs to show those safe parts and they suddenly have time to put the dog on a leash before they chase off, because they have learned, instead of chasing off in the very moment when they see something, to stand and watch a little longer. And then you have time to do something else with them.
If you're interested in learning more about Simone, find her on Facebook and Instagram or at her website, www.predation-substitute-training.com. I'll link them in the show notes. We'll be right back. Yeah, I guess I had always thought that each step led to the next step. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, again, as a positive reinforcement trainer, I was always working on like the interrupting, like you said, or lowering the arousal. Yes. With like engage, disengage around prey animals, mm-hmm. kinds of things, or they'll look at that game. But yeah, it's this thought that if they keep going down the sequence, they're going to get to that unsafe lunge. So yeah. That's sort of the incredible part to me, that it won't necessarily.
Yeah. But maybe it makes it a little bit clearer, because most people nowadays are familiar with the ladder of aggression, that a dog, for example, growls, and if you punish the growl, they skip it and they go on to snapping or biting immediately. And it's a little bit like this, because we try to make parts of this chain bigger so that they show them longer. The aim is not to break the chain altogether, but to show them these parts long enough so that you can, for example, put a leash on your dog or redirect or let them chase a treat instead of a deer or something like this. So it's a little bit like the ladder of aggression, where you try to make parts bigger where the dog is warning. And here we don't have aggression, of course. We have another behavior, but still it's the same approach. We try to make parts bigger and other parts smaller.
That's really interesting. So the four aspects again are was management.
Yes, it's management, right? And prevention, and then the tools in the presence of wildlife. And then the third part is very important, and a lot of people forget about this, because it's games to give them an outlet for their predatory behavior that they cannot show. So the dogs don't know, they cannot kill a rabbit or a deer, because it's a human world and we make the rules. So we need to give them an outlet for those behaviors as well in a safe way. And we try to mimic this with games that come as close to the behavior that they want to perform.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. And then what's the fourth aspect?
Of course, the fourth aspect is a traditional approach. You need to interrupt it when it happens. So because predation is, I think, the most difficult behavior to tackle, because it is so good, it feels so good for the dogs, they want to repeat it, and so it happens. When you are in training with your dog, it might happen that your dog goes over threshold, starts to chase, and then you need a recall in place to interrupt your dog. And there are special types of recall that are more useful than others when you want to recall from a running animal. And this is, of course, also a part of predation substitute training, that you interrupt in emergency.
And that's your other book, right? Rocket Recall?
Yeah, exactly. I put one interrupter into Hunting Together to give at least something, but the very big super recall that you condition really thoroughly, I put in a separate book, because I thought a lot of people who do not have predatory dogs still want a very good and
Absolutely.
Solid recall. So yeah. They don't have to go through the whole protocol. So I put this in a separate book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's usually pretty high on people's requests, but it is interesting. People don't often realize that one of the reasons your dog isn't recalling sometimes is that they're distracted.
Yeah.
By something like a squirrel or, you know, a hamburger on the ground or whatever. That's not predatory, that's scavenging. But
yeah,
you know.
But still, yeah, it can be basically anything. And this is why it makes sense to outsource it to another book.
Yeah, and I love that. It's meeting this part of that dog's needs so that it's gonna be easier to interrupt, I bet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And can all dogs learn it?
Yes, definitely. All dogs can learn it. It's sometimes really hard when people say, oh yeah, you do this with dog XYZ, but you cannot do it with this breed. And oh no, it's not true, because every dog can learn it, and every dog can at least have some success. It's not a promise that I can give you that at the end of the book and at the end of the training program, you will be able to unleash your dog in every situation and poo, whatever. But there are some achievements that every dog can learn, even if you had predatory success before that. So give it a try. It might be worthwhile. Yeah.
I love that you said that. I say the same thing to my clients. We should be able to make measurable progress.
Exactly.
We can't promise, you know, a specific outcome for any particular dog, but you should see some progress in a direction that you can measure.
Exactly. Yeah. And when clients come with realistic goals and aims, then there is a lot that you can achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I have heard nothing but good things from trainers and friends that have tried it with their dogs. And I'm really excited I want to understand it better before I try it with clients myself. I need to learn it before you can teach it. But it's exciting. So does the training look the same for every dog, or are there some steps to identify how strong your dog's prey drive is and how you approach it? Does it change?
Yeah, definitely. It changes a lot. Most of the factors that make me adjust the training program is because of different breeds. You have hunting breeds that were bred for hunting and that these dogs might need the full program with outlets and with breed-specific outlets. So you cannot just take one game and do it with you can, but they will not enjoy it as much. For example, when you have hounds, they want to track. And if you teach them to do something else, it might be nice, but it's not what they really want to do. And then many people come many clients come to my training and they want to, they have, for example, border collies or Austrian shepherds, herding breeds. That's the right word I was fishing for. And most of the time, what I see in herding breeds is not true predatory behavior. It's something that we call pseudo-predation. It's more that the dogs find for themselves an outlet because they have so much stress going on at home. And I see this especially in those very sensitive herding breeds. For example, you have kids at home and the dog doesn't sleep enough, or your dog has separation anxiety and you come home after 8 hours of work. The first thing, of course, you do is you go out with your dog because they want to pee, and then the dog starts to show predatory behavior straight away. And this is not because they are very predatory by nature. It's because it's a release of stress, because it feels nice. It's like a hobby for them. And it's like you come home after work, it was a stressful day, and you say, okay, now I need to take a bath or go for a run, do something for myself. And for those dogs, normally what I first do is I do a background check, and we try to eliminate as many stress factors in their lives as possible. And then they do not need to show this immense predatory behavior anymore.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing how meeting their needs can resolve behaviors sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times. Yeah. And so herding breeds, hunting dogs, are there any other ones that you take sort of a different approach to?
Yeah. For example, with original breeds such as Basenjis, or I have a very nice Akita in my training, they like to go through the whole predatory sequence, through the whole motor pattern. So we need to find outlets for them for each single stage, for the killing part, for the grabbing part, because they, if they were allowed to, they would show this behavior from scratch to the end. Whereas normally you think about those typical gun dog breeds as being predatory, but in fact they are not, because they were bred to cooperate with us. And if you, for example, have a Labrador or any other kind of breed that was used or bred for hunting together with us, it's more easy to train them, because they want to cooperate, and they only show certain parts of the predatory motor pattern, because the other parts we don't want to have in our when we go hunting with them. For example, the eating, as I mentioned before, the hunter does not want the dog to start eating on the prey. It's even they will get dismissed from any competitions when they do.
Yeah. Interesting. So will dogs stop hunting wildlife after you do the training?
Yes and no, because, So in fact, if we really look at it closely from a behavior point of view, they don't. They still perform predatory behavior, but in a safe way. For my clients, yes, they do, because they only look at the chasing part. And this doesn't show either that often or later or not altogether if you start with a young dog. So for the clients, they will say, yep, my dog is not chasing that much. He's not hunting that much. But if you look at the behavior the dog has now learned to perform, they are still, performing predatory behavior. By the way, this is also a reason why I wouldn't do this kind of training with my own pets. I often get asked, okay, can I do this with my chickens that I have in the yard? Or can I do this with my cats or guinea pigs at home? And I always say, you can use parts of it, but it's not my ideal approach here. I would go for a different approach because the dog still perceives your animals as prey.
Yeah, so good point.
And this is so dangerous because when we have our guards down and we cannot be there physically and mentally 100% of the time, it might go wrong again. And this is why I normally go for a different approach.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So people who want to learn more about this, how can they get this information?
Okay, so I have 3 books out now. The one that you might be most useful for what we just talked about is called Hunting Together. And the book that adds on with the recall is called Rocket Recall. So this gives you the basic information that you need to work with your dogs. And I think for a lot of dogs, this is already enough to see an improvement. If you want to go deeper into the topic, then I have a self-learning course that is really comprehensive and goes really deep into the exercises, games, and also into the theory behind it. And it's available from my website.
That's exciting. Awesome. And you also have an Instagram?
I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. Yep. And I forgot to mention, we are going to start another round of instructor courses as well, together with a co-trainer. Once a year, we do a 10-week instructor course for dog professionals where you really learn everything.
That's awesome. That's exciting. And is that one a live online or is it self-study like the other course?
No, this is live with live sessions and you have to film yourself or with clients and then you hand it in and we give you feedback on what you're doing and so that you can modify a little bit for each individual dog. And it is live and it's very, very interactive. I really enjoy these courses because they are so great because we have so many different trainers who come from different fields and predation substitute training is not a set program, do this, do that. It's more like influenced by all different aspects. And I sometimes, when I come across new stuff that I haven't heard before, I'm so excited because I think, oh, we can incorporate this into our training as well. It will help with this and it will help with that. So it's always exciting to talk with other dog professionals about this topic.
Yeah, I love how collaborative the industry can be.
Yes.
Yeah, that's really exciting. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me today.
Thank you very, very much for the invitation. It was great to have to be with you today.
Thank you for stopping by the dojo this week. This is your aspiring sensei, Susan Light, signing off. You can find me at doggydojopodcast.com or I'm Susan Light LA on Instagram, Pinterest, and Facebook. The music was written by Mac Light. You can find him at maclightsongwriter.com. If you like the show, you can support it by subscribing, sharing it with your friends, rating it, and reviewing it on Apple Podcasts. Just a reminder, this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not constitute advice or professional services by either the host or any of the guests. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode of the Doggy Dojo.